And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
Hello, everyone out there in Tampa Bay and beyond. This is James Knowles coming at you for RBLR Sports, covering the Rowdies like we do every week. However, let's get this out of the way. Carlos, I sound like I'm in a fish tank because my microphone is in a house, which is not the one that I'm sitting in. I will have it back soon, and then I won't sound like I'm in a fish tank. Other than that, I'm doing well. Carlos, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm looking at myself in my little box here on the RBLR video stream, and I don't know what's going on with my hair, but we'll stick with it. It looks really poofy right now. I'm wearing my little Georgetown party like it's 1984 shirt because the basketball team plays in about an hour and a half against Rutgers up in New Jersey. Was thinking about making that drive because I didn't have class today. Still debating whether I made the right choice or not. I guess we'll see based on the result. Probably did make the right choice because we're probably going to lose, but nonetheless, pretty good day. Lots to talk about, interestingly. Maybe not Rowdy stuff, right? But there is some news out of the USL Championship. Obviously, there was a championship game played, which was a really, really exciting game, and I'd love to talk about that here in a little bit. But yeah, things are going well. Ecuador U17 plays tomorrow in their third group stage game in Indonesia. They're playing against Panama at 7 a.m., so not too bad to wake up for. And then the senior national team plays at 5 against Venezuela, away in Venezuela for the World Cup qualifiers, which if you're not following South American soccer, Venezuela is a really, really interesting team right now, and they're actually really, really solid. Yeah. I think my opinion is that they're on track to qualify for their first World Cup ever.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, I think they're that good. They've improved significantly since the last qualifiers. And, you know, once it was a game that should be a pushover for a team like Ecuador against Venezuela is now certainly not that. So it's going to be a good game tomorrow. I honestly think they're in better form than we are, so it'll be a pretty interesting one. That being said, tomorrow is today when this comes out. So the U17 game would have already happened. And if you're looking around for soccer to watch, plenty of South American qualifiers today to keep an eye on. So that was a long-winded way of saying I'm doing well and there's a lot to look forward to for me on the sports world, even though the Rowdies are in the off season.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty going on. You already mentioned the World Cup qualifiers down in South America. The U.S. men's national team have games coming up. The U.S. women's national team have just announced a new coach. We will mostly leave that to the Tampa Bay Sun podcast probably to cover. But I will point out that Emma Hayes is probably the absolute best hire that the U.S. women's national team could get while we're on this side of things. And yeah, I could not be more excited, even if she's joining in May. But to bring it back a little closer to the Tampa Bay Rowdies home, because that is what you are most likely tuning in to listen to. Yeah, let's get into everything here. This week, we will be going through the rest of the season until the final game versus Legion. That is in our review. We were obviously supposed to do that last week until there was some breaking news and totally threw off our whole week, in fact. But you know what? It's a long off season, so not a bad problem to have, really. Kind of extends things for us. And we've already got these podcasts lined up, so let's get through that. Yeah, we will be going through coaching changes, injuries, and what we think went wrong towards the end of the season. To get back to the end of the season in the USL Championship, the final happened on Sunday evening, and even though it started at 7 o'clock Eastern time, it went well past my bedtime and closer to, 10:30, 11 o'clock, because, somehow Phoenix Rising looked down and out twice in this game, including in the penalty shootout, and came back to win the whole thing. Carlos, we're going to talk about this more at the end of the show.
That's a good game, yeah.
I mean, just ridiculous stuff. And I will say congratulations to former Rowdies Darnell King and Juan Guerra. Specifically, I don't know about the rest of Phoenix, but I will say at least to those two, congratulations to them.
Yeah, yeah. And then, again, we'll talk more about it later, but I do want to mention how crazy it is that Juan Guerra is really, really young. He's only in, like, his third year of coaching, maybe. He's been in his really early career in his coaching career, so winning the USL championship this early on is really impressive stuff, especially like in the season where they weren't like the favorites by any means. So pretty cool stuff. That being said, James, let's jump into it. Like and subscribe to us on YouTube. Subscribe to us on any major podcast platform. Wherever you get your podcasts, we're there. And be sure to follow RBLR Sports at RBLR Sports on social media, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Threads. We're there. Be sure to drop a follow. All right, James, should we jump into the rest of the recap, which we kicked off 2 weeks ago?
Absolutely.
Just to remind everybody, it was kind of a weird break last week with a bit of minor breaking news. But yeah, jumping back into it, James, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, I can absolutely get us started off here. So we will go through the results very quickly in this section, and then we're going to actually try and break things down a little bit more in the second segment and go through how we remember games going, more so like, you know, bigger picture and narrative, yeah. How things were overall, as opposed to just, oh, this was a loss, this was a win, this was a draw, that kind of stuff. So let's get through the actual results first here. The first game in the after Neil Collins era, as I have it listed here, was a 1-0 loss at home to Birmingham Legion, unfortunately, and that was under Stuart Dobson. So that we did not know kind of set the tempo for the rest of the season because we had already lost to Birmingham, and this was a loss after, like I said, Neil Collins had left. It was just interesting. We didn't realize at the time exactly what it meant, but it was. I remember it being a little bit disappointing. Stuart Dobson did stay on in charge of the team, obviously, because we did not have a replacement coach for the next game. And that was a 0-0 draw away with Indy 11. So, you know, obviously a better result than a loss, but still probably a game that we would have wanted to win at the time. Nicky Law was then named the head coach ahead of the game next versus Tulsa. And that was a 3-0 home win. So obviously a very good way to start your managership. He was named, I believe, as a permanent manager, but it was until the end of the season. So yeah. As much as there wasn't an interim tag on it, you can still say that it was interim. I guess that was kind of, you know, the way that it was given to everyone that he was a permanent manager, but I still wouldn't, you know, I would say that our permanent managers were Stuart Campbell and then Neil Collins and then now Robbie Nielsen. But maybe there would be people within the organization who would quibble with that. I'm not sure. Either way, Nicky Law off to a good start there. So the next game, we went away to Eastern Conference leaders Pittsburgh, and we lost 1-0. Unfortunately, that was also setting the tempo for the way that we were going to deal with Pittsburgh. I remember it being a good game, but, you know, that one was always going to be very tough because Pittsburgh were obviously leading the Eastern Conference. We didn't know where they would end up, but they were a good team all along. And it was shocking that they also went out first in the, in the first round of the playoffs. The next game, was a 4-1 comeback win against Monterey Bay, and that one was at home. I remember going into that game thinking that, you know, we need to win this one, obviously. We need to keep pace, and that was after the loss to Pittsburgh. And then we go down, and that was very disappointing. But it was a very good response from Nicky Law and the boys, and you kind of felt like, okay, we're getting ourselves on a good track here. Even a loss to Pittsburgh, you know, that's respectable. This is a pretty good place to be. Yeah. We played Tulsa again. This time it was away in Oklahoma, and we won 2-1. So, good 6 points over Tulsa. I really can't, you know, ask for too much more there. Josh Perez was announced before the game as our latest free agent signing. That was to replace a bunch of players who had gone out. Ryan Spalding was already off by this point. Obviously, Lawrence Wyke was off by this point. We were dealing with a ton of injuries. So bringing somebody in who had USL championship experience, that was a good move. And based on the stuff that we read just last week, it seems like Josh Perez was signed up for at least a year and a half contract. So good enough to get him at the time. Then we wrapped up August with another away win, this time against the Miami. And obviously, you know, the Miami, I would say that they are not the most well-supported team. It seems like Miami fans are fickle and they have another team to go to. I don't know how many people supported the Miami before Inter Miami came along anyway, but I still want to see every team succeed overall. I just want soccer to grow in this country, and Miami's certainly a big enough city that there could be more than one team. It kind of sucks that they have such a small fan base, but at the same time, they are the closest thing that we have to a local rival, and beating up on them is fair enough. I will take it whenever we do it.
It's not even enjoyable. I feel so bad sometimes.
I mean, to that end, I think that we have much stronger rivalries with other teams.
Absolutely.
And absolutely. I mean, you know, if we somehow end up ever playing Jacksonville in like the Open Cup, because Jacksonville Armada are supposed to be joining the MLS Next Pro division for God knows why. But if we end up playing them, I feel like that would be more of a game than against, you know, the Miami. But anyway, that was how we ended up or wrapped up the month of August. And Carlos, I will let you take it over through September.
Absolutely. And then we can do a whole episode on like my thoughts on Miami FC. And like,
maybe that will be one of our off-season things.
It's just such a weird situation they got going on down there. And I don't know if anybody recalls, but sorry, this is a weird quick tangent, but they drew like pretty good crowds in the NASL when we were still around, and that was still around. We were playing them, and it was no Inter Miami on the radar yet. Like, there was a couple games they drew like over 10K in that stadium, which was pretty interesting. And sad quick drop off, but I guess that's what happens in the. I'm not gonna say anything bad about Miami's sports city, but I can say a lot. Anyway, moving on. As September rolled in, James, we kept up a run of good form now. We would end up winning our fourth game in a row. This game would come against Hartford at home in a relatively controversial, but mostly just, I think, kind of concerning comeback 2-1 win. At the time, we were playing against the worst team at the league, and they put on a good fight, James. I don't know if you recall that game. It took a 90th minute winner from Ariel Martinez to actually seal the comeback win there.
Yep, that's right.
In a really, really good game, but it was a game that was kind of scary, admittedly, when we're playing against a team that was as injured, by the way. They were a very heavily injured team. I think that was the game when they were very sick. I think they had a lot of guys that had COVID, and we were playing a last-place team. Nonetheless, their forward, whose name I'm forgetting right now, I'm going to go back and check the lineup real quick. Elvis Amoh, what a player he was. Had a great goal. Moving on from then, our four-game winning streak would get snapped in Memphis in a 3-2 loss in a game that was just a crazy, crazy game. You could tell the guys were kind of getting tired. A lot of games being played. We would eventually blow what started off as a 2-1 lead. Memphis would equalize in the 88th minute, and then they would score again in the 97th minute. Just a crazy time. So they would win 3-2. Just a crazy game. There wasn't too much to take away from that. Dobson was sent off, and unfortunately Dobson, spoiler alert, never got a win as a Rowdies head coach in his five or so games. Eric Wilde took over that next game against Louisville City at home. Interestingly, Eric Wilde would go on to win his first game as a head coach technically. Against Louisville at home, it was a pretty great game. Cal Jenny scored two goals. Nothing crazy there. Kind of trying to get back into good form. At this point in the season, we didn't really have too many Wednesday games left in us. So it wasn't, you know, fatigue wasn't going to be too much of a factor at this point. We had a week's rest, and then we'd go over to San Antonio, Texas to play one of the best teams in the league all season, one of the best teams in the league the past couple seasons. It was a crazy, crazy game in San Antonio. If you recall, James, we started off on the very poorly. I actually turned the game off before halftime because San Antonio was only winning 1-0, but they were all over us, and I could only imagine we were going to lose 4-5-0. And that was hopeful, honestly. Like, they deserved to score so many goals that first half. Interestingly enough, they'd go up 2-0. No surprise, early in the second half. And then the magic starts to happen. JJ Williams keeps up his run of form, and Charlie Dennis combine to score two goals in 4 minutes. And then Joshua Perez would get his first goal as a Rowdy, and just 10 minutes later. So the Rowdies would be up 3-2 in a span of 15 minutes. They score three goals, and then it would be a 92nd minute stoppage time equalizer for San Antonio that secured the tie for them. So it was just a crazy, crazy game. One of those games that I guess we can talk a little bit about how we felt about that later on, but it was a game that you don't really know how to feel about because you're playing so poorly that you probably should be happy with just a point, but then you were up, so you're kind of disappointed you blew the lead at the end. But then San Antonio was kind of the one that blew the lead in the first place, and like in a much worse fashion. So there's a lot to break down there.
Yeah.
It was kind of one of those games that was so crazy, you kind of just have to throw it away in terms of analysis. So wild game. Next game at home, Nikki Law was back in charge after kind of being in and out of the country, dealing with some work visa issues, if I'm not mistaken. His comeback didn't come too well. We go on to lose 4-2 at home to Memphis. Rodrigo Da Costa scored a hat trick for the visitors. Just not a great game. One of our worst games of the year, even though we scored two goals. Cal Jennings had a pretty great game scoring those two goals. Memphis just kind of started to play better and pull away in the second half. We did turn it around, though. We kind of found our footing again in our last Wednesday game of the year, midweek game. We went to Hartford, Connecticut, and scored two goals, technically two own goals. So we were pretty good, and it was one of those games where I was a little concerned just based on how we played Hartford at home. So a good game to come back and win 2-0 against one of the worst teams in the league. Just a few days later, we would host Loudoun United at home and scrape by with a 1-0 win. Nothing crazy there, just a solid win, played well, and barely were able to get by. Definitely a weird week. You know, two own goals against Memphis. That should have been kind of like, I don't know, at least one of them should have been a goal, like actual goal for the Rowdies. Loudoun United 1-0 win, playing a lot of bad teams here. And then all of a sudden, you get Pittsburgh at home. And it's just a crazy shock here to go from Hartford and Loudoun to Pittsburgh at home. Unsurprisingly, based on what you said earlier, James, you kind of spoiled it. Pittsburgh did beat us at home as well after beating us away. It was a huge game that would have put us in contention for that first place spot, like genuinely in contention. We were kind of in second place for a while here. If we beat Pittsburgh, would have been able to put us into that first place spot and been able to, we've been able to hold out for that last game against Louisville. Also, Jordan Doherty's 100th appearance happened during this weird week. So let me just throw that in there as well. Don't want to overlook that. Unfortunately, after that Pittsburgh loss, the chances for first place were kind of out. Not kind of. They were out the window. We were locked into second place, and there was only one game left to play. It was an away game against Louisville. Louisville had a bit of stuff to play for here. They could still get a higher seed, guarantee a couple home games. So they had things to play for. We did not. We talked a lot about this game going into it because there wasn't much to say. Interestingly, we didn't really know what to expect out of the Rowdies in this game. And what we got was a really, really good performance, a performance that surely would carry us into a fantastic playoff run, finishing the year 3-2 at Louisville against a team that has had our number, a couple times in the past few years, and what's turned into a pretty good rivalry back and forth here. We opened the scoring in the first minute, and then Jennings would get two more goals. Kleeman would score a goal, but for the other team, and then the game would finish 3-2 for the Rowdies in what was a fantastic last game of the year. Kind of upset Louisville when they were looking to get some more points to finish higher up on the table, get a higher seed. And that would be it for the regular season. Fantastic last game to go into the playoffs with. That being said, it would just be 7 days later when we collapsed in what was probably our worst game of the year and lost 3-0, which was absurd. I still don't really know how to feel about that because it kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
there wasn't a ton of indicators that, showed that this could even happen, like this was a possibility. Sure, you could lose a game to a Birmingham that's fine at home, like that can happen, but a collapse like that was definitely not on my radar, especially after a performance like we had against Louisville. And just like that, that's the season, James. 2 weeks ago we started in wrapping up that first half, recapping that the Neil Collins part of the season, and then we have the post Neil Collins part of the season here. Just about half, by the way. Again, I want to remind everybody, Neil Collins left out almost exactly halfway through the season. I think he played one less game that would have been half. So pretty interesting divide there, and actually a very convenient divide for the sake of this podcast.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, let's get into that obviously in a little bit more detail, but before we do, I do want to say liking and subscribing is free, but if you think you might need some new threads coming up, you can support this podcast a little bit more by heading over to shop.rblrsports.com and checking out all the designs we've got going on there. There will be a link in the description as per usual, and as per usual, you can get a 10% discount off of your order by using the promo code COYR. That is COYR for our sign off. Come on, you rowdies. Now, all right, let's get into the games in a little bit more detail. So just as we did in the prior review, we're going to go through all of those results, but with a little bit more nuance, a little bit more than just listing and trying to actually hit on the narrative. So let's start with the narrative of Neil Collins, the first game without Neil Collins, which was a loss to Birmingham. Losing at home sucks, naturally. Everybody can kind of get behind that. But it was the way that we lost to Birmingham Legion both times, and ultimately a third time, in that we just kind of did not play. I mean, we didn't play well against them for sure, but it was also that Birmingham Legion had controlled the central midfield. They did that in the first game that we played them. They did that in the game in the middle of the summer, and then they did that in October as well. It was just, I remember looking, well, we looked back at this one especially because we were looking at, you know, how did the games go against Birmingham Legion before we went into our first round of the playoffs. And it was just so difficult to rewatch it, because I think we created more chances in the first game we played Birmingham Legion. In the second one, we kind of just, it was mostly that Birmingham shut us out. And they got their goal, obviously, but it was mostly that they shut us out and didn't really allow us to create. You know, we like to create by mostly keeping possession, and sometimes we will do it through pressing, but our pressing was certainly off in this one, and we didn't have any offensive spark at all. So I guess that became a bigger trend than we wanted to as we went on, especially against that team.
Sorry, I was muted. I didn't even realize that. You'd think, like, with 3 years post-COVID, you'd figure out how to mute and unmute yourself. But here we are. Yeah, that was a weird one, James. And we talked a lot about that pre-Birmingham. It was one of those games where I mentioned it leading up to the game. Like, hey, by the way, keep an eye on this, because we did get swept by them during the season. But we had the excuse of it being, like, post-Neil Collins. Then, right? So it's like, oh, well, how much does that really count, right? Like, it was post Neil Collins, there was a lot going on in the locker room, whatever. Ultimately, I think Birmingham just did have our number. Moving on, we did have an RBLR watch party for that next game against Indy 11, which was a good time, James. It was my first one in person. I was back in town for the summer. So it was really, really nice to actually be there for one. And it was so much fun. It was so much more fun than the actual game. I'll tell you what, if you remember, the game ended as a 1-1 draw, but it was a great time there being with everybody. And I'm not just saying that, you know, because to say it, like, please come to the rest of the watch parties in the future. So it was a great time. Game itself, not much to take away from that. I think generally just at the time, a little bit concerning, just because, sorry, it was 0-0 draw, by the way, not 1-1 draw. Right. So incredibly boring, and it was one of those games where, again, I've said this a couple times this season, where if you bring somebody who has never watched a lick of soccer in their life and they're trying to get into it, and you want them to come to Rowdy's games with you, this was not the game you want to show them. Hopefully they enjoyed the community that came with the RBLR sports watch parties, because that was way more fun. Plenty of deals over there down in Ybor. But it was I was just a little concerned about the fact that we couldn't string together much offense in that game or against Birmingham. I know it was post Neil Collins, but at the same time, it was the same team and we weren't really changing the system up much at that point. So there was a little bit of concern starting to seep into my mind at that point about a lack of offense, which would be blown up entirely literally the very next week.
Yeah. Well, that is That is something to think about as we go, but it was definitely, it would have been a lot more helpful in that week that we hosted a watch party.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they could have switched the results, maybe I would have asked for that. But Tulsa came into our game. I do remember that they were on a hot streak, because I think that they had won 5 games in a row. They had just made a trade for Phil Goodrum pretty recently, because He wanted to get the hell out of Memphis after they did not sell him, I think, to a European club where he was being linked beforehand. But yeah, he was doing very well. You know, this was looking like a game that it was going to be very iffy. Nicky Law's just starting out, so to speak. We get this draw against Indy 11. But yeah, then we blow them out of the water. It was great. Forrest Lasso and Charlie Dennis were named to the USL Team of the Week for this match. I mean, Carlos, it was just like another good sign when Nicky Law had come in that we were doing a little bit better here. I think that him being in charge was like a new coach bounce. Like, is that what it is? Like a team is doing poorly and they replace their manager, and the new manager comes in and he doesn't necessarily even change up the way the team is playing, but just because it's a new manager, you know, there's a freshness, and you get a new manager bounce. If I am using the correct term, then hopefully everybody will understand what I'm saying. But yeah, it worked out, at least in this game, and we beat Tulsa, and that was great.
Yeah. Yeah, it was one of those games where, you know, his first official game as head coach, he's there. And, wow, you're kind of just expecting to win the title at that point. Yeah, unfortunately, we'd see things didn't actually work out that way. And I think our hopes were humbled a little bit and tempered when we went to Pittsburgh just the very next week and the loss 1-0 over there. That was a game where I went to another watch party for. It was actually the watch party they hosted in Oldsmar, Whiskey Wings, which I love that place as a restaurant. Kind of a strange environment for a watch party. But again, I don't know if it was me, but every game I went to for a watch party was incredibly boring. So as soon as I left, the watch parties got a lot better in terms of the actual games being seen. This was a game where Pittsburgh scored relatively early in the 3rd minute. Dequa, just incredible player and incredible play. We were able to shut them down the rest of the game. They didn't really have anything else going for them, but we couldn't create anything on offense either. So it was an incredible stalemate, literally nothing going on after that first goal. Deion Harris went off injured. Caputo came on, couldn't really do much. And Jamali Waite, my boy, former UConn, former Big East goalkeeper, had a great game. According to FotMob, at least, he was the player of the match, which shows you there wasn't too much going on offense. Yeah, side note, the other game I went to a watch party for was that away game against Birmingham, which we lost 1-0. So, I think it really was just my presence at the watch parties that were throwing the vibes off.
Your best luck.
Yeah, I guess that's it. Yeah, broader picture here, things at this point, think fans were kind of tempering their expectations. The race for first place was getting a little bit more difficult with Pittsburgh winning that game.
Right.
And yeah, things were getting a little bit more challenging, but we were still in the mix. And I think it was just one of those games where we were hoping to bounce back the next week, which we did.
Yeah, absolutely. The next one after that was us going down early to Monterey Bay and then storming back to beat them 4-1. Like I said before, this is one where it kind of started out like very poorly. Monterey Bay, I don't think we're in like a very good place in terms of their standings, and, you know, going down to them kind of was like, oh geez, really, after everything. But yeah, this is one where we actually showed some heart. And I think that this, Carlos, I think that this was the game that was just the worst heat of the whole year. Like a game that I'm sitting there, just sitting, not doing the exercise that all of the athletes are doing, and I'm sweating through my t-shirt. If I'm not mistaken, this was that one.
No,
and
yeah.
It was awful.
That's a great point. I remember that because that was my last game before coming back up to campus. That was a scorcher for whatever reason. One of those games where, like, sun's not really, again, everybody's listening to this is likely pretty local and knows what I'm talking about when I say this. The sun doesn't have to be out for you to be sweating through any piece of clothing you have at all, actually. In this case, again, the games are in the evening. The sun's not really out, but it was just like warm. It was just an actual, usually a melting pot is a term for like diversity and like a positive thing. This was a melting pot in the worst way possible. It was just hot.
Baking us.
Yeah, I was melting. Like, Usually I'm like, oh, I love the melting pot. Like, I love this blend of cultures. This was a melting pot you did not want to be in. I was actually physically melting. And I remember that because we went down for the post-game press conference down under Al Lang. And I felt like the least presentable person to be doing an interview with because I'm walking down there and my shirt is just drenched. Needless to say, it was a good time to leave Florida at that point. So, and we left the team on a pretty good note. So as that game wrapped up, Dennis and LaCava got on the team of the week. And yeah, we totally ran our opponents out of Al Lang that day. Caputo did go down injured this game, James. I actually don't recall that one. That was a good note to put in here. And then, yeah, we wouldn't see him the rest of the year, actually, right?
Nope. No, that was unfortunately for him and for us, that was a rather short-lived signing.
Yeah. And really unfortunate because it seemed like he had some talent. He was just kind of like looked like he'd be a solid defensive wing back if we needed him, defensive midfielder even. Seemed like a good utility player. Unfortunately, couldn't get too many minutes.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, that result, I think, would kick off a pretty good run of form for us. We would string together 4 wins in a row, if you recall from a few minutes ago when we ran through the schedule. After this game, we went out to FC Tulsa, kept up that good run, and won 2-1. We scored 2 goals in 10 minutes to cancel out what was a late penalty for Tulsa at the end there. It was a penalty that didn't end up meaning too much. We held our ground, and it was a game where we showed a lot of grit in those last 15 minutes because Tulsa had plenty of opportunities and plenty of possession. We were sitting back for those last 14, 15 minutes. That was a really encouraging win because you do need some of those wins every once in a while throughout the season. A win where you can go up, you're winning by 1, but you have to defend really, really well for an extended period of time. That was a really encouraging game at that point in the year because you never know when those games could happen in the playoffs. And unfortunately, we didn't get too many of those or any of those this year in the playoffs. But at that point in the year, really encouraging win. It was a different type of win, but a win we absolutely needed to see from this team at some point in the year.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's the old good teams know how to win even when they're not playing well, so to speak. Absolutely. And not that the Rowdies weren't playing well, because I think that honestly, between this one and the Monterey Bay game, we were, you know, kind of just trying to absorb as much as we could in the heat and play teams back and forth side to side, and, you know, kind of just tire them out. And that also extended to games that were outside of our region. You know, this was a really hot time for pretty much everyone in the Northern Hemisphere, but we were probably the most accustomed to heat because of obviously our geography, other than I guess possibly the Miami, but yeah, we would just move them side to side until they were tired and really couldn't play. So, I think that, you know, as much as a professional athlete is going to be very well seasoned to running in heat, this was a period where we could kind of just take advantage of that. And, I think that it was something that we did, and to pretty good effect because we had, unfortunately, so many injuries that that's kind of also something that we needed to take into consideration is, you know, how little exertion can we put out there and still win a game? Absolutely. You know, sometimes you do have to make those considerations. The next game, RBLR again hosted a watch party. This was to play the Miami down in the Miami region. Yep. And I guess that's at FIU Stadium, I think, Carlos, the Ricardo Silva Stadium. Such a bad venue for soccer, honestly. The turf is terrible, and you can see all of the rubber pellets coming up when they kick a ball. But
it's a great football stadium. It's a great
I could see. But unfortunately for our boys in green and gold, it was you know, not the best venue, but we still got a win. I said before, beating a Florida rival, even if they are not the best of rivals. The match finished closer than it needed to be, considering all of the chances we had. I do remember that part of it. I think that this was one where we could have scored more. And, you know, despite the fact that we had some players who were racking up some goals and really would towards the end of the season, this was not one where that came to the front. And despite that, it was another one where we did what we had to do and we got the points anyway.
Yeah, another game where you kind of just need to grind it out and hopefully grab that win, and they did that. That's two games in a row when that happened. That game was really fun to watch, in particular for me, because I was at an open bar and watching it on my phone. Everybody was trying to ask me what the hell the Tampa Bay Rowdies were over here in D.C. So I was giving a little, like, I did, like, a gospel on what the Rowdies are and a brief, like, some rundown on the situation of U.S. soccer about, like, too many beers in, and it was great. And everybody, I got, like, random people watching this game on my phone with me. Ultimately, a very exciting game. But again, one that should not have been that close. But we can say that about this next game as well, which was our game against Hartford. Hartford opened up winning 1-0 very quickly off of a goal from Amo. And man, James, I was scared on this one. I'm not going to lie. This game was scary. It took a Cal Jennings moment of magic, as per usual, to make something happen.
As per usual.
He had an incredible run to equalize the game and stoppage time right at the end of the first half. Just an incredible, incredible run from him. Hartford was a bit disappointed. Obviously, he got that goal going right before halftime after defending incredibly well, but at least one goal was coming for us. It had to, absolutely. And then the second half, they were defending, again, incredibly well with their thin roster, and it would take another moment of brilliance. And Ariel Martinez, lovely finish, incredible, cool, calm, and collected finish right in the box to put the Rowdies up 2-1 in the 90th minute. Yeah, crazy game. It was a Hartford team that was in really dire straits for a variety of reasons. Half the team was sick. They were very bad already throughout the year. And their emergency goalie, by the way, they had an emergency goalie this game, and he played pretty well, actually. So kudos to him. Side note, with the attendance Miami FC has been having, I think merits a move to FIU's soccer facility.
They have. Why would they? Okay, I didn't even realize they had a separate one.
I just wanted to throw that out there because I just popped in my head that I saw one of my friends who plays for UNF play against FIU. Admittedly, much smaller facility, but it would be way more fun to watch
it out. I mean,
gosh. Yeah, it would be much more like for a club that isn't just struggling to draw over 1,000 people. I think it would be much more conducive of some sort of atmosphere than an 18,000 person stadium where 800 people show up at most. Again, that's just random, and I feel bad for taking. It's not even a shot. I'm sorry. It's not meant to be a shot at Miami FC. It's just like something needs to be. We need to take a look at what they're contributing to the league right now. Yeah. Next game, James would have unfortunately break that good run of form.
Yeah. As you said, the Hartford game. That was very silly, but we moved on, and our next one was against Memphis. I wrote in my notes, I'm skipping ahead. These matches where we underperformed, they were, you know, kind of suggesting that we were playing well, but maybe we were too optimistic. And that next one against Memphis, it was in my notes, let's say, an absolute bleep show. We did not play well, but we ended up holding a lead and taking it until very, very late in this game. I remember how this went pretty clearly. I don't think that this was our best game by any means, but it was another one where we were, you know, just doing enough, doing the most of enough and getting everything we can out of kind of a bare minimum of not effort. I should say definitely not effort. We were obviously overrun with injuries at this point, but you know, just still not like a well-oiled machine type of team like we have been in the past. So yeah, Memphis made some subs and they started to, you know, really pile on the pressure. This is getting into the 70th, 75th minute. After a ridiculous non-call, Stuart Dobson got two yellow cards in the space of a minute. So I don't remember how exactly that happened. Memphis was up, or excuse me, Memphis had tied it up. It was 1-1. And then the Rowdies were trying to break out with JJ Williams down the wing. And there was just like a very late call. or a very late tackle that was not called. So this is how it started. Stuart Dobson is yelling at the referee and he gets himself a yellow card. And then the next thing, we see that he's walking away and we're like, what the hell has just happened here? I don't understand what's going on. Stuart Dobson continues. He leaves the field. And, you know, we figure out and the commentators say, which I remember also the commentators were extremely biased in this one, like ridiculously so. But I guess that's neither here nor there. Memphis or in this game afterwards, we saw that Stuart Dobson had two yellow cards listed and they were both in the 90th plus two. So he got two yellow cards within a minute, according to the official statement. I don't know how that happens. But regardless, Stuart Dobson was sent off in this game. It was insane. As we go on, they get a penalty very late in the game. So Stuart Dobson's been sent off. We're holding on for dear life. And there is a call. I believe that this was Forrest Lasso making the mistake that led to the penalty. Correct me if I'm wrong there, Carlos. But
yeah,
regardless, they have the penalty. The penalty is missed. I believe it was put off. Put onto the post, or was it just straight onto the post? I don't remember if Connor Sparrow saved it, but it hit the post. Forrest Lasso is chasing to get back. And in so doing, which by the way, that, you know, that's generally good defending, but he bundles it into his own net and Memphis wins this game. I remember that this one, I was even more than mad. I was just confused. Like, How did it even go this way? I didn't understand that before I could even get to the point where I'm like, now I'm upset about it.
Yeah. I was furious about that game. And it was, there was going to be a lot of chaos in a span of 10 days. Because we had that game and then we had San Antonio. The San Antonio game, there was much more positives to take out just because it was more of a comeback. When you blow the lead so explicitly against Memphis, it was so sad. Just really, really upsetting. But it was one of those games where you got to the end of the like game and you saw how tired these guys were by the 88th minute.
Exactly.
When Memphis actually scored their equalizer, like guys had their hands on their knees, like everybody was exhausted.
Yeah.
So I wasn't particularly surprised that Memphis would score a winner after they equalized. I was kind of expecting it. Actually, I was talking with another Rowdies fan, like texting back and forth while we were watching it. And we're like, yeah, like they're going to win. Once they equalized, it was unfortunate that it happened via penalty and then via an own goal after the missed penalty. Lasso did not have the stellar season he usually has. He's had a couple like highlight or I guess low light reel mistakes, unfortunately, this year.
I think that I don't remember exactly how many penalties he gave up, but off the top of my head, there is this one. There is the one in the first game, which I will give him the benefit of the doubt and say that was not a penalty anyway. It literally wasn't in the box. But I don't think that he had the best in terms of being, careful with his. I mean, he's a large man. And if you're a larger person, it's generally going to be like referees are going to give the benefit of the doubt to the smaller person. That's, an internal bias. But at the same time, you got to be cognizant of that. And I don't think he always was.
Yeah. I digress. We move on. The following game was a much nicer result. It was a 2-1 win at home against what have become, again, somewhat of our rivals in recent years, Louisville City. We won 2-1 at home. It was a game where Jennings had another two goals. He was continuing his run of form. He was kind of in the middle of that incredible hot streak for him. Scored in the 39th minute. Wilson Harris scored right out of the gates in the second half for Louisville City. Looked like it would be anyone's game at that point, but it was Kyle Jennings again who would come to the rescue in the 61st minute and put us ahead 2-1. This was a game that came just 3 days after a game that was incredibly exhausting for us in Memphis. So I was really impressed with how he responded, how he looked on the field, the lack of tired legs as early on in the game as I thought would happen. Deion Harris was injured in this game, so he wouldn't appear, but Louisville City could not overcome the short rest for us and the tired legs. It was the Rowdies that would come out on top 2-1 and kept us in the race for that first place spot. So we were looking pretty good. We were still in the mix. After that loss to Memphis, I think there was a little bit of chatter about that kind of being out of hand at this point, or out of reach, the first place spot in the East. But this game against Louisville kind of put us right back in the mix. So it was a great way to bounce back. It was a fantastic win. And just, you know, 7 days later, we would have another game that would certainly be described as an S show against San Antonio.
Yeah. This one was not, again, it was another weird game, but it wasn't ultimately bad in the end. Stuart Dobson had served his suspension and taken over again for this game. So yeah, we were going into San Antonio with the head coach that they expected to have at this point. We started this one poorly. Again, just, you know, very, very, I can't, you know, keep going back to the same words, but I guess it was that lack of a well-oiled machine. And I don't know that we were even, you know, I don't know that we were even doing that in the first half of this game, I should say. Yeah. So we go into the second half 2-0 down. And I believe that this was another RBLR watch party, because I remember all of us were like, man, this is kind of looking grim. This is not looking so good. As it happens though, we ended up scoring 3 goals in the second half. If I'm not mistaken, it was Josh Perez who got the third one for us. And all of a sudden, somehow we're like, how did we get into the winning position here? We had played so poorly in the first half. And as they say, soccer is a game of two halves, but it just seemed so unlikely that we were going to come back and win this game. And ultimately, I guess it was, because in stoppage time, we gave up a late equalizer off of a corner kick. So, you know, giving up goals on set pieces is something that I think the Rowdies, have done at, you know, really bad times to give up set piece goals in the past. You know, teams will give up set piece goals, I'm sure, just by nature of the, you know, way that the game goes. But I think that we have a habit of giving them up at bad times. This would have been a great win. San Antonio, I believe, was close to the top of the West, if they weren't at the top at this point, but they were still obviously a very good team all along. It would have been really good after all of these results that just came recently, where we were up and down and up and down. But we were just up and down in this game. And that's the way that it ended up finishing, is we got 3-3 out of there. And, you know, I guess a point is a point, but to have gone through where we were like, well, I guess we'll go home with none. And then we're like, oh my God, I think we're going home with 3. And then you go back and you're like, I guess we'll take our 1. It was a lot to try and process all in the span of what, 90 minutes, 2 hours.
Yeah, it was one of those games where on the schedule I kind of wrote off as probably an L, but I'm going to predict a draw for optimism purposes. And technically I was right, but man, it was a weird one. Like, it was one of those games, again, where you don't really know how to feel. But immediate reactions were kind of upset, because we had those 3 points. Like, it felt like locked in. It was an incredible comeback. There's no way we blow a comeback and allow a comeback to the comeback, which is what ended up happening. But things happened. We left with a point, which was more than we certainly deserved in that first half. And then we moved on to another dip in the season, right? I mean, just the next week, we're talking about kind of these ups and downs and these results recently, and kind of scraping by a couple bad teams in that little 4-game win streak. We got to the game against Memphis at home, and we conceded that hat trick that I mentioned earlier from Rodrigo Da Costa. Jennings was scored 2 goals, so it seemed like offense was kind of clicking, but again, like, something was just not really working totally well. We'd go on to lose 4-2. So that would be between two games, we tore 5 goals, which is usually a great mark. And we wouldn't win either of those games, which is kind of frustrating. Allowing 7 goals in 2 games, a little bit more concerning. Something that I think I was a bit concerned about at the moment. I don't know. A Rowdies team traditionally has just never really allowed too many goals. Like, we've always been a pretty good defensive team since I've been around. Allowing 4 goals against Memphis at home was certainly a bit concerning. But I guess the good thing about having a weekday game immediately after that is you have a quick opportunity to make a turnaround and try and get right back on track.
Now, Carlos, this is when I was in Scotland, so I will have to defer to you, but I do remember seeing the schedule, and even while I was away, I was like, man, this is going to be tough. And on top of that, Hartford were obviously going to be out for blood after that game that we played them before, where they had to go and get you know, an emergency signing to play in net. So, yeah, tell me how this one went, as far as you can remember.
Yeah, this was another game where I was watching on my phone on the way to a bar. I remember this very clearly because it was just a weird one. Wednesday nights are nice in DC. And it was a weird one because we would go on to win 2-0, but it was certainly a game where you look at the score sheet and you're trying to see, like, oh, who scored? Kyle Jennings? JJ Williams, maybe? No, it was Joe Rice for Hartford and Beverly Makangila. Two guys would go on to score 2 own goals for the Rowdies, I guess.
I don't know that I've ever seen that, actually.
Yeah, and in a span of 10 minutes, by the way. I mean, again, Joe Rice own goal was kind of Mickey Mouse because it was a shot, and then he would eventually like kind of deflect it in. I don't really count like goalie own goals that much, but I guess for the sake of the meme, we'll count 2 own goals in 10 minutes. And we kind of controlled the game. There wasn't really a ton going for Hartford. We had 3 quote-unquote big chances, 16 shots to – or sorry, I'm reading this wrong. So apparently the stats are weird, and the game felt a lot different than the stats actually read, because it looks like Hartford actually outshot us 16-7 and had more big chances than we did. But it was a game that certainly felt like we were in control. That being said, they had plenty of opportunities, apparently, and maybe I'm just misremembering. I never really felt like this lead was incredibly in trouble. We were fine, and it was a game that I think was a great bounce back. But according to this, Hartford even hit the post twice, so maybe I'm just imagining a totally different game. I'm not. But, yeah, certainly a weird game, I guess. Felt like we were in control. I never really felt the lead was in trouble after we went up 2-0. That being said, Hartford had their chances and certainly was battling for a team that was at the bottom of the table at this point.
Yeah, and to pick up on a theme similar to that, the next week, or excuse me, 3 days later, we hosted Loudoun United. They are down close to the bottom most of the time. We beat them 1-0, and that was another one where we were just scraping by. Again, I was in Scotland for this one and the next one, actually, against Pittsburgh. But yeah, it was the Loudoun United game. I did at least catch the highlights of that. And it was just, you know, I thought that the Rowdies were just doing exactly what they needed to get past this one. And, you know, we've all done that at work or in school or whatever. You do what you need to do and you don't really put in more effort than that. I don't think that the Rowdies were doing that because they were don't care or anything, but there were, it was just, this is a rough time of the season anyway. Like, it's towards the end of the season. Obviously these games all came very quickly, and we're dealing with all of the injuries that we have been talking about in all of this review and the prior ones. So yeah, it makes sense that, you know, if you can just get out of it, then fair enough, get your 3 points, get home. And with that one, then the next week we hosted Pittsburgh. So this was a game I knew going into it. I couldn't be there, obviously. I couldn't be in the United States even. But there were big implications here. If we had won, I believe, Carlos, we were 3 points apart. So that would have put us 3 points or level with Pittsburgh on points, but we were down on goal differential. And
we were up on goal differential.
Okay, well, there we go. But if Pittsburgh won, obviously they would take that lead and they would spread it to 3 or 6. They would add 3 to it. So yeah, 6 points apart. And ultimately we lost and they did go 6 points ahead of us. With that being said, we stayed in second for the rest of the year. Pittsburgh sealed up their spot in first for the Eastern Conference, I believe, for the whole league overall. Carlos, what was your takeaway from this one?
Yeah, Pittsburgh game was a weird one. I remember I was watching, it was a slow night at this spot on campus I work at, so I threw it on the TV, and had some people watching with me, and it was off to a terrible start, because by the time I got it on the TV, Pittsburgh was up 1-0 already, Another goal from Dequa, who, spoiler alert, was best player in the league this year.
Yep.
wouldn't take much more than that for them to come out with the result. We outshot them. We outpossessed them. But they had much better chances. They had the more dangerous of the opportunities. Again, what does possession actually mean if you can't create anything with it? Pittsburgh only had 28% possession, had 6 shots, 3 big chances, 2 of them goals. So they outplayed us, and they outcreated despite having much, much less of the ball. It was one of those games where it was pretty humbling because I kind of figured that our loss to Pittsburgh over there in Pittsburgh was a result of playing away, playing against a good team on a pitch that only they really know how to play because it's super duper narrow over there at a Highmark field or Highmark stadium. So it's always challenging to go up and play over there, hard to play our game over there where we like to go to the wings a lot. Figured at home it'd be a different story. On this night in particular, it was not, because they actually played better in Outlang than they did at home at Highmark. So yeah, they were just a great team, and it was, I think they were the disappointment of the season, ultimately losing in that first round, by the way. I think our loss, which was incredibly embarrassing, which we'll get to in a minute one more time, unfortunately, was overshadowed by that Pittsburgh loss because they were just so, so good. They were a machine. They were a well-oiled machine, and certainly just seemed like their year. I mean, Bob Dudley was having a year. He finally had his team that I think could go all the way after years of just kind of not really doing it. And they certainly looked like it in this game. So I was pretty confident that if it wasn't us, or if we saw Pittsburgh again in the playoffs, it'd be really difficult to beat them. And I wouldn't have been surprised if they won at all at this point in the year.
I agree with that. The last game, like we've already said, it was unnecessary for us. It was against Louisville City. They had something on the line. We did not. We were locked up in second place in the Eastern Conference. Somehow we went there and we still beat them. I enjoy that because I like beating Louisville City. But it was just weird. So, Carlos, if you don't have anything, we'll just get to the last game in the playoffs. And what do you have for the Lou City game, if anything, here?
Nothing.
Yeah, that's nothing. That. That's kind of how it was.
It was really cool, and Leo Fernandez was back on the field, and that was sick.
Actually, you know what? That is a very good point for us to include in this, because it was great to have him back. I think that was really giving us a mental boost as fans. Yeah. Finally, there is the playoff game, one and done, as we have already noted. We reviewed it only a short little while ago, and it is the game that's freshest in all our heads. I think that, you know, it's just something that we have to realize where the team had been struggling in terms of their fitness, not literally like they aren't fit enough as athletes or anything, but they have all of these injuries. And so the players who are playing are being run into the ground. I think that Nicky Law said that in the post-game press conference. The players did not mention that, because I'm sure, you know, as a player, you don't want to mention that, but Nicky Law did say that. So maybe he was looking at it with a bit more, I don't know, reality or honesty or whatever word you want to choose there. That being said, even in the space of being beat down by a hard, hot, rough season, it was several players' worst game of the year. I think that, you know, with the clarity of time, given a couple of months afterwards, several of them would agree to that. I think that there were under 3 players who wouldn't get like a failing grade, so to speak, if we look at the FOTMOB numbers of it all. I think Connor Sparrow was fine in net. I don't think that any of the goals were his fault. I think that Cal Jennings was fine up top. I don't think that he did enough, but he didn't cause any problems. And, you know, maybe there was one other player out there that I'm forgetting, but Jake LaCava, I remember being very disappointed with. Forrest Lasso, I remember being very disappointed with. There was one other in the midfield. Well, Lewis Hilton went out injured in this game anyway, if I remember correctly. So the only other point that I wanted to emphasize afterwards is that I was very disappointed in the size of the crowd for a playoff game. I mean, you know, maybe that was on the team being unable to get the proper hype out there. Honestly, it's probably harder just as a second division team, but still, this is the playoffs. I was really hoping that we would have close to selling out. That usually happens as we get farther into the playoffs, but you can't you can't neglect the first game. So yeah, that it sucked all around, honestly. That's just where it was. It sucked.
Yeah. I don't have anything else to say about that game. It's fresh in our mind. We don't need to recap it too much. We all know how we feel. Or I guess maybe I don't know how I feel about that game still, is my point. I think that's kind of how I feel, right? We move. You know, Robbie Nielsen, new head coach. Nikki Lausiel on the staff, which I think is valuable. And
yeah,
a bunch of players coming back. A bunch of players we can go out and add some depth pieces for and with. I'm looking forward to making a little wish list on our future off-season content. Always fun to start thinking about that. But yeah, that was the season. I mean, it took us a little bit. We got there across the course of two episodes. We went through a lot this year, James. There was a lot that happened in the course of just one season. Lots of ups and downs. Coaches in and out. Coaches when they got in and out. Just a weird, weird time. And somehow still managed a second place finish and just couldn't bring it together at the end for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to go over in terms of how that game went. But as you said, we've already done that. This is a review show. So, you know, let's just say the narrative here. And the narrative was like shocking disappointment. It was just like, how did this even occur? Birmingham, as you said, they had our number. They beat us in the midfield again, I think, in this one. I think they beat us all over the field in this one. Let's not mince words here. It wasn't just the central midfield. It was on the wings. It was at the back. It was everywhere. So, it was unfortunately probably most players' worst game of the season. And that includes the beginning part where we were struggling so much. I mean, it's just unfortunate that it came when it did, naturally, but yeah, unless, Carlos, you have anything, I think we can leave it there. The narrative was a really, really tough season that we thought was going better than it was, probably. I think that's a good way to leave it, because obviously it was going to catch up to us at some point, all of these issues that we were having, and most of those issues come from injuries, but it caught up to us immediately, right out of the playoff gates.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so let's hope that this upcoming year we have, obviously, a very good coach to replace Neil Collins, and I think that we do, and B, a little more depth for when the injuries hit, because that has happened all of the last 3 years, and there's no doubt in my mind that it's going to happen again, because we live in a hot place. All right, well, Carlos, let's do our extra time segment, and we've talked about the Rowdies in the playoffs. Let's get back real quick to how the playoffs finished. Phoenix Rising somehow are the champions. I do not know how. If anyone knows
dog mentality, that's it. That's my analysis.
If anyone knows the term like cardiac kids, that is Phoenix. They have left it late, I think, in every game in the playoffs. They did this a lot over the course of the season. They were down and out against Charleston and somehow managed to scoop a goal out of the bottom of the barrel to put themselves into extra time. I thought they were out in the penalties. Juan Guerra, the manager, said this team doesn't know how to die. And they are dead. They are gone. They are buried and they are still climbing their way out. It doesn't make any sense, honestly.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Rocco Rio Novo. I'm picturing his name. Is it Rio Rocco Novo? Either way, dog. Just a crazy, crazy athlete who knew how to turn it on at the right moment. It was. Hold on. Let me fact check myself before I say this. Yeah, it was him in goal when we beat them earlier this year when they came down to Tampa and we beat them 2-0. Rocco's Rio Novo's. Did not have this type of performance and apparently just was waiting to release the superstar he had in him until the championship game. So good for him. It's funny seeing him bring out like the Dibu Martinez celebrations.
Yeah.
Post game, which was a good time. And admittedly was not even particularly rooting for them in the final. I kind of wanted to see Charleston get their title in the really packed house. It was great to see for them. They've been struggling in terms of like, since I've been watching the league, like generating a really great atmosphere. I'm like, big crowds, and man, like that kind of sucked for them. But an incredible game for Phoenix, and just again, pure dog mentality for them.
Yeah, there's no other way to say that. Congrats to Darnell King and Juan Guerra. I actually played with Darnell King in high school. I don't know if he would remember me. I was very quiet then, but it's cool to see him, you know, going out there and getting a trophy. That's
yeah,
awesome.
There you go. I didn't play with Juan Guerra, but he was one of my favorite midfielders at the time.
Here we go.
I love that man. Just a great, great midfielder. So much talent from him. And he was, I think, one of the more undervalued and underappreciated pieces when he was in our central midfield back, 2016, 17, 18-ish, somewhere around there.
Good while ago now.
16, 17. It was around there.
I mean, as the other thing you said, he's still a young coach. So, you know, he's probably got a long way to go in this sport. And that's that's obviously very cool.
Yeah.
To continue with the USL Championship, the Player of the Year was announced at halftime. It was a little bit of an awkward presentation, I will admit, but congratulations to Albert Dequa, the leading scorer for the Pittsburgh Riverhounds and the league overall. He had a great year. I don't know if like MLS beckons or something like that, but you know, he might as well stick around in USL and rack up some more goals. Honestly, I think that he did obviously very well for them. But you know, we're going to have to figure out a way to shut him down next year because he's a very good player. And I think that he does deserve Player of the Year. You know, it's a joke that it often just goes to the guy who scores the most, but at the same time, I don't know if we're going to try and focus on one individual player, like, you know, who would that be other than the guy who scored the most? I don't know that there was a defender who had a better season. I don't know that there was a midfielder who had a better season. I would certainly not say that there was a goalkeeper that had a better season in their position. Maybe there are some stats about, you know, saved goals or something like that I'm forgetting, but, you know, fair enough. I still think that Albert Dequa was a worthy winner.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Shout out NWSL champions, Gotham FC, by the way. Perfect ending for legend Ali Krieger, and definitely not a perfect ending for Megan Rapinoe, who ended her career very quickly in this game with an injury, which was rather unfortunate. Both still legends of the game. But yeah, definitely a better night for Ali Krieger out of these two legends and NWSL champs Gotham FC.
Yeah, that was another weird game. I was watching it at a Friendsgiving and had to switch between computer and TV, but it was pretty back and forth. And you know, they got, obviously, like you said, Megan Rapinoe, she has apparently torn her Achilles tendon, so that's a terrible way to go out. But at the same time, you know, the game continued, and I think it was halftime, Gotham were already up 2-1. As the game gets into stoppage time, Gotham loses their goalkeeper to a straight red card. She handled the ball outside the box in the denial of an obvious goal scoring opportunity. And despite that, you know, OL Reign did not get any chances on the goalkeeper who filled in for her, which happened to be an outfield player because they had used all their subs. It was just very weird to see. And congratulations, as you said, to Gotham. I think that the fact that they went from worst last year to first this year, obviously pretty good. Doesn't get much better than that, in fact. But Carlos, that is where we will be leaving it tonight. So listeners, thank you for tuning in. Next week, we will be doing player reviews and grading them on their season, just like we did last year. Now, if you don't already, please follow RBLR Sports on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, Threads, wherever you are. That's where we are too. I am mostly on Twitter at RBLR James K. What about you, Carlos?
Same. I'm very active on Twitter at CarlosTBA10. Going to be tweeting a lot about the Ecuadorian national team tomorrow. And also Georgetown Soccer, by the way, because Georgetown Soccer just got seeded as the fourth seed in the entire country for the national tournament. So it's going to be really fun stuff. I'm the highest seed in our quarter of the bracket. First game coming up on Sunday against either Pittsburgh or James Madison. Yeah, I've got plenty of guys I'm really good friends with on that Georgetown team. They're incredibly talented, and so many of them deserve professional looks. And I've been itching for the Tampa Bay Rowdies to get on that for so long. I've been trying to convince my boy Marlon Tabora, one of the Big East midfielder of the year, to get in contact with the Rowdies front office, give him a look or something, because he's so good. Incredible talent on the wing. we're looking for a little bit more depth over there. He's a senior this year. He graduates in May. So
just saying.
I don't know.
Well, you can find all of that and more on our Twitters. And if you would like to get at the podcast, it is at RBLR Sports. But please like and subscribe as well to our podcast. You can get the full experience on YouTube, or if you just want to hear us, of course, we are on Spotify, iHeartRadio app, Apple and Google Podcasts. Anywhere you are, so are we. So with the season wrapped up and a couple more reviews to go, and with the league wrapped up overall, come on, you Rowdies.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.